UK Wine Show, show number 157. Night Timber with owner Eric Harima and winemaker Sherry Spriggs. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 157 for the 22nd of May 2009. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's wine show, we're talking with Eric Harima and Sherry Spriggs from Night Timber about how they're dealing with the growth in vineyard area and the new products that are coming on stream in the next few years. This week, I've been fairly busy chasing up leads and info for the London International Wine Fair, and I've had a few friend requests on Facebook, so cheers for that. A couple of people have had trouble finding me on Facebook, so look for me with my email address, chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk, and you'll find me there. I've also been checking out some social wine notes sites from as part of my follow-up to the London International Wine Fair, and I'll probably do a podcast or at least a spotlight once I get my head around them. Something for you guys to get your head around this week is our mystery grape. This week, it's a French noble grape grown throughout the world. It's used to make red wine, rosé wine, and ice wine in Canada. It is grown throughout France, from the Loire Valley, Bordeaux, and the southwest. It's not a really hard one, but it's not easy, and it's also easy to get wrong this week. So have we think about that. While next up, we have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. The 2006 Saint-Emilion classification, which if you remember was scrapped by the French Court of Appeal in March, has been partially reinstated. A law passed on May the 13th contained a footnote which clarified that the six châteaux promoted to Grand Cru Classé in 2006, that's Château Bellefonte-Belsier, d'Estio, Fleur Cardinal, Grand Corban, Grand Corban d'Espagne, and Montbusquet, would be able to keep their status with immediate effect and date it back to the date of the classification. The ruling also applies to two properties which were promoted to Premier Grand Cru Classé, Pavy Macouin and Troplong Mondo. The saga has been ongoing since July 2008, when the 2006 classification was annulled, but the 1996 classification will still stand for all other properties in Saint-Emilion.
What's next, Jane?
Well, the closure company Zork has launched a resealable closure for sparkling wine that will retain the fizz in the bottle for several days after opening. The closure is being launched in Australia and New Zealand, with three major companies, including Constellation Brands, doing technical trials over the past 12 months. The closure pops like a traditional champagne cork when opened, but leaves you with a polyethylene cap, which can be easily pushed back onto the bottle to retain the bubbles and keep the wine fresh. Initial tests by the Australian Wine and Research Institute show it can prolong the life of sparkling wine after opening and can provide equivalent or superior performance to traditional cork. Zork CEO Dave Pahl said the company plans to launch in Europe within 6 months and hopes to have three manufacturing plants on the continent in 3 years' time.
I really like this closure. The old Zork was a fine closure, but its own real advantage over the screw cap was the pop sound. This time, it can be put back on top and help preserve the champagne. Brilliant! I've been trialling a couple of these champagne stoppers, and they're a bit hard to open and close compared to a typical champagne stopper, but I think I just haven't got the knack of it yet. I have two interviews, one with Dave Pahl and Duval, the other people who innovated with the champagne closure recently, and we'll get to them later on in the year. I also have an interview with John Brooks, the inventor of the original Zork, way back in show 23. So if you want to go back there and have a listen to that. From fizz closures to some news about our interviewee this week. What's happening at Night Timber, Jane?
Well, it's all change at Night Timber on the sales front. The English sparkling wine producer has appointed a new sales manager, Francis Brackley, to join them from Leigh & Wheeler, who were recently bought by Majestic. The new appointment comes just a year after Stephen Clark was brought in to run sales and marketing for Night Timber after a 22-year stint at Laurent Perrier. So let's hope Francis Brackley remains in the role for a wee bit longer. That's all from me this week, but don't forget you can get these stories at our website 3050.co.uk.
Cheers, Jane. Eric's last wine marketing person didn't last long. Neither did winemaker Dermot Sugru when Eric arrived. After the spotlight, we talked with Eric about how he's taking England's first sparkling wine producer forward. But next up, we have the spotlight. And this week, we're looking at wine and food matching, but specifically hot, spicy dishes. Things like vindaloos. Normally when people think about hot food, they think Indian, Mexican food. And to me, anyway, the media reply is lager. Now, this is not a bad combination, but wines can do very well with spicy food. The key is all about softening up the heat. To manage this, you need to understand a wee bit about how to play with heat and wine. The key thing to look for in wine that works with hot food is sugar. Sweet wines cool the palate and take the heat away. A wine with an acidic backbone will also help take a heat away, with the acidity encouraging the cooling effect of saliva. In a similar effect to acidity, bubbles can create the illusion of freshness as well. Alcohol is definitely a no-no when it comes to spicy food, so the lower the alcohol, the better. Alcohol, as you probably know, causes a warming effect in the mouth and the throat, so it adds to the heat of the food and should be avoided. Similarly, hot food emphasizes the drying effects of tannins in wine, and most people don't like strong tannins, so red tannic wines should also be avoided. So what are we left with? Well, to me, the perfect wine to go with hot dishes is a semi-sweet white wine with refreshing acidity, or better yet, bubbles. The wine that fits this bill is Moscato d'Asti, which is high in sugar content and hence lower in alcohol. It provides a sweet, refreshing wine. Obviously, off-dry wines such as German Rieslings, and since it's English Wine Week, some of the sweeter styles of English Bacchus would also provide an excellent wine to accompany hot, spicy foods. If it's red wine you require, you need to look at light, low-alcohol reds with low tannins, and ideally a bit of sugar. Now, you could try a red wine such as a Beaujolais, a nice light Beaujolais, but even if you want to go that way, you could go along a sweeter style rosé, which could do the job. I hope that gives you an idea about hot food and curries, although I can't imagine too many blokes who go to the curry house after Friday night ordering a rosé. But our mystery grape this week can make delightful rosés, although generally they're dry rather than sweeter that you need for the spicy food. But how are you getting on with this mystery red grape? This cool to moderate climate variety is one of the parents to the acclaimed Cabernet Sauvignon, although it ripens earlier and is less troubled by poor weather at harvest. It's often used in Bordeaux as an insurance against poor vintage, although it reaches its heights in Cheval Blanc, one of the few famous wines where this variety dominates. The rest of the world tend to use it simply because it's a wine used in a Bordeaux blend, and as such, if they want to create a Bordeaux blend, they stick it in. I hope that helps a bit. You should be pretty close to it now. And while you're thinking about that, let's have a listen to this week's interview with Eric Harima and Cherie Spriggs. Eric is the owner of Nye Timber, and Cherie is the winemaker there. We talked to Eric about the future of one of England's best-known sparkling wine producers, and certainly the first. Hi, I'm here with Eric Harima and Cherie Spriggs from Nye Timber. How are you, Eric and Cherie?
Very well this morning. How are you?
Good, good. And yourself, Eric?
I'm fine too. It's a pleasure to be here.
Excellent. We actually did our first show with you guys while looking at your old winemaker, Dermot. But I understand you've been now in charge of the, you and your partner are in charge of the winemaking for a couple of years.
Yes, that's right. My husband and I came to Nye Timber in early 2007, and we've been taking charge of the cellar and the wines from there on out.
Excellent. That's quite must be quite exciting.
Yes, yeah. It's always interesting when you have a couple working in the cellar. In fact, Brad and I we've worked together in many different capacities throughout our life, so we've come to know each other very well in that way. But it has its benefits, definitely, because you know your palates very well, and you can really, really discuss the wines in an intimate and in-depth detail, which only has benefits.
Sure, I work with my wife as well, but I wouldn't say it works as well as it sounds as it does with you. We have our very clear parts of the business we work on, and that seems to keep everybody happy. So. Okay, one of the things I want to talk about is when I spoke with Dermot a long time ago, you had just bought the business, Nye Timber. You'd already also had your own plantings of vineyards and quite substantial plantings because the original Nye Timber was, what, about 12 acres, wasn't it? Or
no, the original Nye Timber was 34 acres.
Oh, 34. Oh, quite a bit bigger than I thought. I had a good wander around. Didn't seem like 34 acres when I was walking around.
It's got a very small, special, intimate atmosphere to it, but they're there. Those wines are there.
And how much is the new plantings that went in?
Well, we have been planting over various years. In May 2007, we reached, in total, including the original Nye Timber Vineyard, 260 acres. And this year, we're going to plant, so next month, another 90 acres, which will bring us to 350 acres.
Yep, that's big plantings, isn't it?
That's right, especially for English standards.
Well, Dimbys will still be bigger in English wine producers, but you must be creeping up to number two, three, four?
Yeah, I think we were equally biggest with Denbys since 2 years ago, and they actually, because they have some older vineyards that they decided to grab down, so in some ways we might have been a bit bigger already, and this year after the planting we will be considerably bigger.
Okay.
But that's not our, we don't measure ourselves like that. It's just part of our growth plan that we aim to expand.
And is it all, because Knighton originally was all about sparkling wines, do you produce any still wines now?
We don't, and we don't intend to. We are specializing on what we can do best and what we feel what can be done best in England.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons I wanted to work with Eric at Knightimber, is the focus on what you do well and doing it to the best of your ability, because it's far too easy to spread your portfolio thin and not take advantage of the incredible terroir that you're in to make the best wine that you can from that. So it was really a fundamental thing for myself that Eric's taking the company in this direction.
The moment you do a classic cuvée and your other big brand is Blanc de Blanc, are you still producing those two, or are you going to produce any other additional wines?
We are still producing both products. In general, the classic blend will be produced in larger volumes than the Blanc de Blanc. Mm-hmm. And from a while back, we decided that the Blanc de Blanc is such a premium product, it might not be produced every vintage.
Okay, so depending on subject to the quality of the grapes, etc.
That's right. And we're also preparing a rosé, which will be launched hopefully within the next few years.
Okay. That'd be interesting, because one of the things about Knightimber is, well, historically anyway, is the wines have had quite a lot of lees contact. You know, they're very, very bready, yeasty aromas. So it'll be interesting to see how the rosé develops, because you don't normally go for a lot of bready, biscuity aromas in a rosé.
Yeah, no, I think the rosé is going to take Knightimber to a more complete portfolio, where we have something that's fresh and fruity and fun, as it were, that complements the very connoisseur-like wines that Knightimber has. So the rosé has been really fun. We did our first serious run of rosé from the 2007 vintage, and it's pretty special, I think. So it's not something where we need to keep it for very extensive periods on lees. That said, I think we'll still give it enough to give it the complexity. So we're not talking about something that is 9 months on lees. It needs more than that.
I've noticed some, in terms of the wines you're selling at the moment, you've been pushing some older vintages that were probably from your library or something like that. What's going on there? Have you, when I've sort of been watching what you've been selling and all that sort of stuff, it looks like you've been selling down a lot of your historical stock, I presume, to make sure that you haven't got too much, so you've got lots of room for the new wines that are going to be coming in on stream for your new vintage. Is that right, or have I misread that? Or?
Well, we have, I think, a common practice of selling wines when we feel they are mature. And we do have some mature and older vintages that are very interesting, and some are in very small volumes, which makes that you have to sell them in a certain way. You can't offer them generally to the market, but you might offer them to certain customers, like in the on-trade, where a restaurant can have a specific product that they like or which suits them very well.
Yep. One of the things I've noticed with your wines is sometimes they do tend to be slightly over autolic, I think, in my opinion. You know, sometimes getting into the Marmite-y spectrum of the wines, and I've noticed there seems to be quite a bit of bottle variation as well. Some wines are very Marmite-y, not to my palate at all, and then you might get another wine that's absolutely brilliant and right up my street. And so I find the bottle variation quite interesting. Is that a problem or something you're aware of?
You have to keep in some context what we're talking about here, which is as you quite rightly say, quite an old wine. Now, if you take any wine as it matures, the older it gets, the more prone you are going to be to have bottle variation within that. I think it's fair to say that we aim to put more balance as we go forward into Nye Timber wines, and if that means that we want to reduce some of that, as you described, Marmite character, then that's where we'll go.
And also, I think in every part of the process, we now focus very much on product consistency within the vintage, but also vertically. We see that as a crucial part of quality, being consistent in quality, but also in style. Yeah. And I think that's a question of experience.
Are you going to move to a non-vintage style or blend multiple vintages to get that consistency, or are you still going to stay as a vintage fizz?
For now, our products for the coming few years will remain to be vintage products, but we definitely are going to come with a non-vintage. But our non-vintage will not just be a vintage without the vintage on it. It will be a genuinely vertically blended sparkling wine, which will mean that we have to take years to build all the reserve wines up to make such a product. So we will bring it, but it will take a while.
Are you storing wine now in readiness for non-vintage?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. We have to build up those stocks. And really, so doing something like that is something that you can only really do with the growth that Nye Timber has embarked upon. If you don't have enough colors on your palate when you go to do your blending, then you're not going to be able to achieve that consistency that you claim you are with a non-vintage.
Yep. I've noticed also, interestingly, that for a couple of years, your wines became quite hard to get hold of. You know, we were on allocation and all that sort of stuff. And recently, the allocation's been removed. And also, your prices came down a smidgen as well. What was driving that?
As a wine producer, you can't ignore the outside, external factors. And it is true what you say, that traditionally, over the last years, there was a lot of demand for Nye Timber products, I think, as for most other English wines. And that has slowed down a bit. So then we will adjust to the market. And the good thing is for our customers that we, for the moment, we don't need to allocate them as tightly as we did until, let's say, a year ago.
Yeah, I think I was on a 10-case allocation, which is like, well, that's no use.
Well, it depended per customer.
Yeah, obviously.
But it's never good news if you're in demand to tell your customers that you have to do that. And it requires, I think, a good explanation that they know why you do it.
Yep.
Not just as tactics, but out of necessity. And that you want to continue building up a long-term relationship with them. And I think by now, our customers are more aware of our long-term vision and how we see their role in that.
The new plantings that have come in, have you seen a difference in style of grapes or wines? Obviously, they're a lot younger. So is there a difference in the quality of the grapes coming into the winery?
Your question is well-timed, because we saw the first... we saw a very, very small amount of new plantings in 2007, but then quite a lot of the new plantings, their first crop from that came in with the 2008 harvest. So this past year of 2008 was quite exciting for us, because we got quite a large selection of grapes from different plantings in different areas. And you spend so much time agonizing over every little detail of that vineyard. At the end of the day, you don't know until you get that fruit in your hands and get to see it. And I'm very, very, very excited and happy with some of the fruit that we got in this year.
Even though '08 was a tough year.
'08 was a tough year, very tough year. So it's something that I think if you can look at what we got from some of these new plantings from 2008 and think, well, there's really only one direction. As the vines get older, as we have vintages that are a little bit easier, then we're in good position. So it is really exciting. It's the most rewarding thing, having spent all that that time and effort into those vineyards.
What are the new vineyards in terms of grape varieties? Because they're not too far away from Knightumbrough originally, are they, the original site?
That's correct. We have continued, as we always have, with the champagne varieties of Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Pinot Meunier.
What sort of breakdown of planting in the new vineyard?
We've got a bit more Pinot Noir than historically, which brings still majority of Chardonnay, but instead of around 70 or 80% Chardonnay, we're now at around 60% Chardonnay, 60 to 70%.
Mm-hmm. And what's the object of Pinot Meunier in your blend?
It has a forwardness, an easiness to it that helps the maturity of the wine. It can also have this very exuberant character to it that is very expressive on the nose. So within the context of the blend, you could almost call it a bit of the friendly portion.
Okay, a lot of people, I always think Pinot Meunier is more as an insurance scheme against poor weather, because it flowers different time and it picks at a different time. It's just a different beast.
That's what one would expect, and I think what we're generally seeing in France, but we don't have that experience so well because the Meunier seem very vulnerable here to non-optimal conditions in the weather.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So will you keep with it, or do you think, because a lot of people, you know, they think they get excited by Blanc de Blanc and Blanc de Noir, but...
Well, if you would just look at reaching an optimal yield, you might decide to not to have Pinot Meunier, but we won't do that because we're not just looking at high yields. We're mainly looking at high quality and certain characteristics. And we feel that Knightumbrough needs to have that part of Meunier, even if it's small.
One last question before we wrap up. Exports. You must, with volume coming on stream, you must be starting to think about exporting at least. Do you export? Because I know at least one Hong Kong person who wants to get hold of your wine. He wrote to me asking for
it. There indeed is and has been a lot of demand internationally for our wines from many countries within Europe, outside Europe, including Asia, including Hong Kong. There have been a few people from there, actually, that wanted our wines. And we feel that it's, for now, it's best that we focus on the UK market, which has already been quite a challenge up to recently with that strong demand. And we assume that demand might pick up. But definitely export is going to be in our agenda in some years from now. But we'll do it in a very focused way.
What, pick a country and target that country, or?
Target a certain country or a few countries in a region and very much focus on the way how we're going to do it. I don't think we'll just sell wines to any request that would come in. It would need to be part of our brand building.
Okay, so you'd find a merchant that would represent you in that country as opposed to selling directly?
It would be likely that it would be either an agent, but a party who suits us very well, who has the reach to the type of customers that we want to be connected to, not dissimilar to where we are here in the UK, for example, in London, in the on-trade, mm-hmm. at certain segments, which would need to be similar. In another country with, I think, a bigger, more difficulties in convincing people that Knightumbrough could be on the list.
Have you got an idea of what countries you may consider?
We got some ideas, but it's a bit early for now because it will take probably 3 to 5 years before we really start on that.
And is that a function of just the new grapes coming in, the volume increasing, so you can easily meet your UK demand? Is that what's driving it, or is it?
There are various factors driving it in volume. It will depend on how we estimate that we can reach such a market, because you have to do it, as I mentioned, in a certain way, which requires you to allocate a certain part of your volume. Mm-hmm. And yes, the demand in the UK has a role in that as well.
All right, then. Thank you very much for your time. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Eric and Sri. I think the development of rosé and non-vintage wines are a nice way of dealing with some of the volumes coming through. And surprisingly, Eric sounds like exporting is going to be an important strategy for him longer term. That's consistent with Eric and Richard Balfour-Lewin, who we spoke to last week. We have two more English-centric shows, one looking at EU legislation and the effects on English viticultural scene, and another about wine branding with Chapel Down, which I'll release soon, but not for a while. We're going to take a break from England for 3 to 4 weeks as we look at recycling of wine bottles. Now, we start this journey by talking to Richmond Council about how they collect wine and bottles. Richmond is my local council here in West London. We talk about the economic value of recycling wine bottles. The following week, we go off and talk with our old friend Paul McLavin from OI about the issues for them purchasing glass for recycling and then using it in their recycling and some of the do's and don'ts that you should be aware of. Finally, we finish up talking with RAP to get a high-level direction of the UK and EU policy about wine bottle recycling and what they're doing about lightweighting glasses. If you're not sure who RAP are, RAP is a government-funded body in charge of reducing our waste. So lots to look forward to in the coming weeks. But before we finish the show this week, it's our mystery grape variety. Now, it's a red grape variety in Bordeaux and Loire, used in Cheval Blanc, and used to make ice wine in Canada. It is Cabernet Franc. And the last thing to finish up with is a quote. Well, this week it's a French proverb. I quite like it. In water, one sees one's own face, but in wine, one beholds the heart of another. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.